This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
Welcome to Wells Tech, episode 364 for Tuesday, October 24, 2014. Sorry, it's October 21st, 2014. Off to a great start. My name is Sally Draper, and I am happy to be joining you today for the Wells Tech Podcast, where technology intersects with ministry. We do this each week at wellstechlive.wellstech.wells.net, and we also archive it on our Wells Tech website. Let me just do a quick screen share of that. It's over at wellstech.wells.net. So you can visit wellstech.wells.net and get the entire previous 363 episodes of Wells Tech. All the history is there. We started out as an audio podcast. Now we're a video podcast. And we produce the shows, like I said, each Tuesday at 4 p.m. Central. So tune in live or visit the archive to download the audio or video and listen at your convenience. All right. You may be wondering why I'm by myself today. Normally, this is a conversational podcast, and I'm joined each week by Wells Chief Technology Officer Martin Spriggs. This week is a little different, as was last week. Martin is out on medical leave currently, recovering at home from some recent surgery. He's doing great, and we'll just send a special shout out to Martin and tell you that we hope you continue on the road to recovery, and we would welcome you back to Wells Tech. Obviously, you do a great job at introducing the show every week, so come back and help me out with that. Martin is home resting, and we were going to have a topic that was going to be something that we needed to do together today. And so instead, I did a little brainstorming and came up with a different idea for today's show, something that I could share with you from my recent presentations at both the Michigan and Minnesota District Teachers Conference. I was privileged to be there and present Google Apps for Education and a variety of tools associated with Google Apps for Education accounts. And the one that I want to focus on today is actually Google Sites. So today we're going to just look at the mechanics or the how-to of doing Google Sites. And this is true. This is applicable for schools, but also for churches and individuals. So anyone that's interested in having a website, putting content on the World Wide Web, you certainly can make use of Google Sites as a platform for your website. It's a free tool available to everyone. You can get it with your regular Google account, an individual Google account, or you can allow and make it through a Google Apps for Education or Google Apps for Nonprofit account. So lots of ways to have a Google site, and all of them are free, so you can't beat the price. I will mention before I dive in too deeply that there's a Q&A tool that's available with this Google Hangout. If you're watching live, you can ask questions with the Q&A option in the live viewer. So throw me your questions and I'll try to incorporate them into the show if you have any. All right, so we're going to dive in and take a look at Google Sites and just kind of a basic overview of how you can create your own Google site. So I'm going to start, if you're watching the video, by sharing my screen. I have a Google site up on my screen. It's one that I created. It's called Sally's Technology Resources, because oftentimes I work with people and share presentations and links and things like that around technology products. And so I decided it was time for me to organize those on a website. And I chose Google Sites to do that. Now I'm actually working on our Wells Google Apps domain. So I'm on a Google Apps for Education or nonprofit domain with my demonstration. But like I said, this would work with your regular Gmail account as well. So before we get too deep into how to do it, I just want to give you a quick walkthrough of the Google site. And first of all, let's see if I can scroll down. The scroll bar is kind of skinny over here. And it's not really letting me scroll. Oh, well, there's nowhere to scroll to because it's only this width, this height. So anyway, if it were a longer page, I could scroll down and I hide this white section near the top, because on the top of a Google site, there's a bar that has some buttons and things available, especially over in the right-hand side. And I'm seeing that and sharing that with you on my screen because I'm logged into my Google site and I have edit privileges here. But most people, when they visit a Google site, their view of a website starts below that area. So if you're looking at my screen, where my header image that says Sally's Technology Resources starts, that would be the top of the page for a public site visitor. I just have the extra things because I'm logged in and have edit privileges. So basically, I can edit the existing page, I can add new pages, and then there's all kinds of things I can do under the gear icon. That's where the majority of things are hidden away. In addition, throughout Google products, there's a share option, and that's where you can control who can see your website and who can edit your website. And it's very similar interface to sharing things like through Google Drive or whatever. All right, you can set up your website with a header area with a top bar of buttons, and also you could include a sidebar. You can do both or just one or the other. In this site, I just used the top bar of links to pages on my site. You also have an editable footer area, and then Google adds some things to your footer like the recent site activity and a link to report abuse and print the page and things like that. So that's just a basic overview. To create a site, you're gonna wanna go to sites.google.com. And when you go to sites.google.com, if you've never created a site, there'll be a link or some overview of Google Sites. But once you've created one site, what you see is a listing of all the sites that you have privileges to edit. So you see that at sites.google.com. And what you want to focus on here is the red Create button. When you click the Create button, you need to know a couple of things. You need to know what you want to name your website, and what URL you'd like your website to have, and then if you'd like any kind of design theme or template applied to your site. Just a quick word about site templates. There's a link to browse a gallery of templates. And basically what this is there are people who have created websites and saved them for you to make use of. So this would be to jumpstart your website with complete menu system, web pages already set up for you, design, layout, all those decisions made for you. And you could select one of these templates, and there's all different kinds. There's templates for schools and education, for clubs and organizations. So if you really wanted to make a website for your soccer team, for instance, there's a template for that. And then it would give you a design. It would give you, you know, you should have a page named coaches and one name schedule and things like that, and it would have all of that set up for you. So you know, it's a way to create a site really quickly and easily. And another thing I'll mention is that within your Google Apps domain, you can save site templates yourself. And so if you wanted everyone, all your teachers, to have the same design and layout for their classroom sites, you could save that as a template, and they'd be able to find it in the template gallery for your domain. And it doesn't have to go outside of your Google Apps domain if that's the way you want to make it available. I'm just going to name this my Wells Tech site. And as I typed my Wells Tech site in the name area, it actually generated a web address with that in it. Now, the first part of the web address has sites.google.com in it, and I can't control that, but I can control the second part of the web address. And so if I don't like the name that it came up with, my-wellstech-site, I could change that at this point. But once I create the site, I can't edit that base URL of the site anymore. further down the page, there's a place to select a theme. A theme is what colors, background colors, designs are part of your site. And the thing about themes is you can change them later. So you can pick something, and if you decide later you want to change it, you can get to it. You can change it to your heart's content. You can also customize the theme. So even if you select a theme and you like everything about it, but one font selection or whatever is specified, you can go in and tweak it and make it your own. So I selected a theme. I gave my site a title, and I did not choose a gallery from the gallery of templates because I just want a blank start from scratch website. So then I need to press the red create button at the top of the page. And just in a matter of seconds, I have launched a new website on the World Wide Web. It gives me the home page and a layout. And the layout for my site currently has text with the site name near the top, a sidebar with the home page and a sitemap in it, an area for adding content to the home page, and then those buttons along the top that I mentioned where I can edit a page or add a new page or get to all the behind the scenes goodness that's available there. Here's a note for you. You should use Google Chrome if you're working on a Google site. It just seems to behave better in Google Chrome. So that's what I'm using, and I have had my best response from the system that way. All right. Next, I want to show you my favorite things in the gear icon. And there's a hierarchy in the gear icon when you're on your site, and it's represented with bold titles and lines between the sections. So there's a section near the top for page actions. Then there's a section for page templates. We'll talk about those in a moment. And then there's a section for site actions. So those are things you can do to the whole website. And in particular, I want to point out here, there's a link. It's the fourth from the bottom in the gear icon, and it's called Manage Site. And that takes you to the behind the scenes site management area. And you have a panel of options that you can dig into in that area along the left sidebar. So if you're interested in changing that theme that you selected originally, here's where you would go and see the list of themes and change it to something different. All kinds of things that you can do here in the manage site area. And if you make any changes, you can press save to save those changes. I'm just going to press cancel at this point. So again, in the gear icon, manage site takes you, I call it backstage. This is the behind the scenes area where you can manage things like your sharing and permissions, scripts, deleted items, attachments, pages, all those kind of things. There's a link here with the name of the website at the top of the left sidebar, and it has an arrow next to it, and that takes you back to that public facing side of your website. So those are the two parts, behind the scenes, backstage, manage site, and then your public facing view of the website where you can edit the content on the individual pages. I will also mention that in Google Chrome browser, there's an option called incognito window. And oftentimes as I'm working on the site, I'll use incognito window just to make sure the public visitor to the website sees the same thing I'm seeing as I'm logged in. So if I launch new incognito window, let me just grab the link to my website. And this is going to be fun because I'm thinking it's not going to work well, and you guys aren't going to see it anyway because I don't have this window shared. But when I launch that, I get prompted to log in on Google because I'm not logged in and my website permissions are set that you have to be me to see this website. So the next thing I usually do when I create a new website is I think about who I want to have access to it. And I use the sharing link to do that. It defaults to just me being able to edit and see the site. So I can change that so that anyone with the link or anyone inside my Google Apps domain or whatever it may be can see the site. And I can save those settings. And then in the new incognito window, I would be able to see the site as a public site visitor would. Hope that makes sense. One more thing I want to point out, another behind the scenes area is called Edit Site Layout. And this is the area where you turn on and off the different components of the page. So if I don't want to see something, I just click the button along here. There's header, horizontal navigation, sidebar, and custom footer. So if I don't want to see the sidebar, I just click that button and it goes away. If I decide I really want that sidebar, I click it again and it reappears. Same with the horizontal navigation, the header, and the custom footer. And then if I want to make edits to the sidebar, I would just click in that area or edits to the top header area. I'd click in that area and upload an image or whatever I wanted to do. Let's see. I'm going to choose a file. I have one on my desktop called my Google Sites Practice. So I'm going to say OK. And now my header area should refresh. And I'm not seeing my image show up. Oh, I have to select custom logo. I did it too quickly. Now I'm going to say OK. And it says my changes have been saved, but I'm not seeing them in my header area. So I'm not quite sure. Not a very good demonstration. Maybe I have. Nope, I have header turned on. And I'm going to say I want to use a custom logo and choose that file from my computer. And now it uploaded. I needed to wait for it to upload before I clicked OK. And now when I click save, that logo shows. I think I'm going to turn off that sidebar navigation and click close. So now I'm out of that behind the scenes mode where I was editing my layout. Here's a look at how to edit the page with the pencil icon. That turns on your edit areas and your formatting up along the top. It also allows you to choose different layouts for the page. So if you want to have two columns, for instance, with an area that spans both columns along the top and bottom, you could do that. You can insert things like tables. You can format all different ways. And with the insert command, you can add all kinds of content, including content directly from your Google Drive, from your Google Plus account, like your photo albums from Google Plus. You can add YouTube videos. Under more gadgets, you can find even more, like gadgets that will allow you to add embed code or a Google Calendar or whatever it is you want to add on the site. The sites are very versatile and fairly easy to add content to. When you're all done, you just have to remember to click the Save button in the upper right-hand corner, and your web content will propagate. All right, I mentioned that I would say I would tell you about page templates. So if you set up a page and you want to duplicate that page over and over again, once you have it exactly the way that you want it, you can save the web page as a template. This is different than the site template I talked about before. This is a single web page. And when you create new web pages, there's a place to select a template, and your saved web page template would be added to this list, and you'd be able to select it over and over again. So that's helpful if you want to have consistency across your site, set up a template, and then use it each time you add a new page to the site. All right, guys, that's the basic rundown on Google Sites. I will tell you that over here on my Sally's Technology Resources, I do have a presentation that I put together and some links and things on my Google Sites page. So I'll include a link to that in the Wells Tech show notes. I also want to show you another page on that site titled Student ePortfolios, where people have given you templates and things that you can use to create student portfolios. So they can work their way through your different grade levels of your school, adding projects and things each school year and have a website that reflects their entire career at your school, or perhaps even multiple years on into a high school if you were to set this up with your high school association or whatever. So just kind of some food for thought. There's a lot of different examples here of e-student portfolios, and that's one way that schools are making use of Google Sites for their classroom portfolio of activities. So that's just some basic ideas about Google Sites. Hopefully that gives you a starting point at least for creating Google Sites and navigating the different menu options that are there. Because I know it's kind of overwhelming. There's a lot of different menu options, and just orienting yourself to that public view versus the behind the scenes or backstage view and all the things you can find in those places. I linked to Sites Help on that webpage. So if you dig in or do any searching or whatever, you're going to find great help. And I'd be happy to help you as well. So if you have specific questions or are stumped by the behavior of your Google site, you might want to just shoot me an email, and hopefully I could help you with that. So that's your introduction to Google Sites, and that's our feature topic of the day here on the podcast. Time to move on then to some of our other segments of the show, starting with news in tech. And I did a little searching. Actually, I did a little Twitter searching because I wanted to find something pretty new and cutting edge. And I found an interesting article I want to share with you, maybe a peek into the future. And this is an article about a new wrist wearable that's actually a flying drone. So this little wearable, it's called Nixie, comes off your wrist and turns into a quad rotor basically, and has a camera embedded. So you can check out the website flynixie.com. It's just an easy way to wear a quad rotor on your arm as something that looks like a watch but actually comes apart and will fly. They have a really cool overview video. You can sign up for updates. It's currently in development, and just looks to be amazing technology of the future. So quad rotors are just really hip. I don't know if you guys have seen some of the pictures from the MLC quad rotor, but they bought one with a GoPro camera on it, and they've made some really great pictures. And so here's a quad rotor for everyone. You can control it with a remote control on your telephone, your smartphone, and just amazing stuff. So I'm guessing more and more of that to come in our future, and maybe in the not too distant future. So check out and read about Nixie and imagine your life with quad rotors all around you, buzzing by, taking your picture. Should be interesting. All right. And I have an education-focused ministry resource that I wanted to share with you. This is from Hippo Hooray for Second Grade blog. And this particular teacher wrote about using Pandora, which is a streaming audio service, as background music in her classroom. And it's a really fun little read, and she actually lists a lot of Pandora channels that she recommends. The two that she specifically featured were Solo Piano Radio and Lori Line Radio. And she just likes to have piano music, no words being said or anything like that, but just some piano music playing in the background. The one caveat that she mentions is that Pandora is, it has a free and it has a paid for version. And the free version is very adequate, except occasionally they have advertisements. Excuse me. And she said her class has kind of gotten to the point where they kind of announce when the advertisements come on and say something like, do you need a new, they'll shout something like, no, be quiet and let us work. So the students just kind of tune it out and keep going, and the commercials don't last long, and they move on. I guess the option there would be to pay for a Pandora account to avoid that. Anyway, she lists some really good ones, and then people chimed in with other ideas, like the Piano Guy, the Disney Channel, Two Cellos, Claire de Lune Radio, the O'Neill Brothers, Classical for Studying, toddler radio, white noise radio. There's a whole bunch here that you could check out as background music. Children's indie music. Just lots of different ones. I'm guessing that she wrote from a public school perspective. She talks about playing some church hymns intermixed, and that just makes her happy. But, you know, there's no words and not necessarily, you know, pushing anything churchy on her students or whatever in a public school setting. But sometimes the students will remark and say, hey, they play that song at my church, you know, so that makes her happy. Anyway, she also mentioned using things like holiday stations during holiday season or Indian, when they studied Native American, having some Native American drums and flute music playing, that kind of thing. So I thought it was a great idea for a background option. And Pandora is super easy to use. You just go there and let's say you want to listen to the piano guys. You just type that in and there's a radio station built around the piano guy's music. And it'll just start playing their music and you can just leave that playing in the background in your classroom. It's not necessarily that everything on the piano guy station is done by the piano guys, but it's in the same genre of music. And so, yeah, check it out and perhaps it'll be of use to you in your classroom. All right, we have our first Q&A, and it's from my friend Martin Spriggs. Apparently, Martin is watching this afternoon, which doesn't make me nervous at all, Martin. And he says, greetings to all, and see you next week. So, sounds like he will be back with us next week, and we can't wait for that. I personally can't wait for that. All right, time to move on to my picks and tips of the week. And since Martin's not here to offset me and give you a couple of different perspectives, I'm going to overload you a little bit with some Google tips. So I have a couple of them to share. The first one I was reminded of by my friend Richard Byrne, who blogs over at, well, this is from his practicaledtech.com site. He usually teacher, so he must run multiple sites. Anyway, practicaledtech.com, he recently released a post about how to use Google Docs offline. And I have a confession to make. When I was in Michigan, we lost internet access, and this happened to me. And unfortunately, I knew that it was a capability, but I hadn't set up my drive to work offline, and I was totally doing the Google thing. And I should have read this article sooner because I wasn't able to access my Google presentations and stuff. If you're in your Google Drive, by the way, there's two versions of Google Drive. There's an old version and a new version. And if you haven't switched to the new version, this is actually the new version. Let me just show you quickly what the old version looks like. And the way that you can tell the difference, primarily for me, the big key is that there's these check boxes in the old version. So if you're using the old version, you're going to find offline under the more option in the left navigation. So you just follow the steps there in the when you click offline. If you have switched to the new drive, which you can do by clicking the gear icon and say experience the new drive. In the new drive, you're going to use the gear icons and go to your settings. And that's where you're going to find an option called offline. It says sync your work to this computer so that you can edit offline. Now, according to Richard Byrne's article, a couple of things apply. And that is, and I'm not going to do that right now because I don't necessarily want to sync. Well, I guess I can uncheck it. I've crossed the barrier, folks. Don't check it unless you really mean it. Anyway, that's not a problem. Anyway, what he says, the caveat is that if you have multiple people using your computer, you want to be sure, you know, before you say to sync to this computer. The other thing is, once you do this and you want to work offline, you need to be able to use your Google Chrome browser because it only works in the Google Chrome browser. If you try to open it in Internet Explorer or whatever and your drive comes up and stuff, it's not going to work offline unless you're in the Google Chrome browser. So that's just a little bit about offline drive. The other tip that I wanted to to share with you. This is something that I shared at teacher conference, and it's related to having multiple Google accounts. And you guys, many people now have multiple Google accounts, particularly Google Apps for Education users. You might have a personal Gmail address and a school Gmail address or Google Apps address, and you can open up both your accounts here. If you click on your little icon in the upper right corner of your Google account, you can open up both accounts, and you know, you can add more accounts using the add account, that kind of thing. What I would find is that I would go to my Google Drive for these different accounts and be frustrated because I would have worked with some files on one account and they weren't accessible on another account. So I used the power of Google Shared Drive sharing to set up a shared folder. That's what I meant to say. And so you can select a particular folder or create a new folder on your on one of your Drive accounts, and then go into the sharing options for that folder. And what I did was I shared it with my three different Drive accounts where I wanted to have access. So I have a Wells Drive account, I have a personal Drive account, and I have an MLC Drive account. And I shared that folder with all three of those accounts. And then I add things in that particular folder, and it doesn't matter which account I'm on, I can get access to them. So all of my work stuff, and it's pretty extensive across all my different responsibilities. I use Drive quite a bit. It's all in that one folder, and irregardless of which account I'm on, I can get to it from my Drive because I use that shared folder concept. So that's my little tip for you. If you have multiple personalities like I do, you might want to share a folder with your different accounts, and then you can access it from any of those. All right, enough Google goodness for one day. Now it's time to move on, and we're going to talk about a Wells Insider tip. And for Wells Insider this week, what I want to share with you is the fact that our great Forward in Christ magazine is online on the Wells website. So let me just share my screen once more. And here is the Forward in Christ page. You can get to it from the homepage of the Wells website. And probably I would think they have a unique URL, forwardinchrist.net perhaps, but I'm not 100% sure of that. I'll have the link in the show notes that'll land you right here on this page though. And on this page, you can read articles from the current Forward in Christ magazine. But also there's an article archive available. And so that's what I find most exciting about this site, is that they have archived articles from all the way back to 1981, I think. So you can select by date, you can filter by series. So if you're looking for a particular series of articles that have been posted, I know there's Bible study articles, there's, you know, if you're looking for something on 1 John, for instance, you could apply that filter and you would see a series of articles that were from studies on 1 John and see when they were published and dive in and read those articles. So I think that's a very powerful tool. If you're trying to research, I think there's been so much great content published in Forward in Christ over the years. The magazine is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year. Now, the online archives don't go back nearly that far, but back to early 1980s, wow, that's a pretty long time, 30 years worth of, 30 years plus worth of articles here online. Here's a section over here on the right side of the Forward in Christ page where you can see articles by category. So if you're looking specifically for devotional materials or a Bible study or whatever it may be, you can see those as well. Now, I've been in a pinch before for ladies' Bible study responsibilities or whatever it might be, and I've taken my tablet along with me and opened up, you know, a Bible study from right here on the Forward in Christ website and shared it right off my tablet. So there's lots of uses for this Forward in Christ content, just for your reading pleasure. Just definitely check out Forward in Christ on the Wells.net website. All right, guys, Now I'm going to move on to the need to know section, because there's lots of activities going on and you definitely need to know about them. First up, you are the first to hear about our newest offering of Final Web for Dummies. We're going to be teaching Final Web for Dummies online. So you can be part of an online 3-day class, January 21st through 23rd. 2015. This is the same Final Web for Dummies 3-day session that we do in person at times. We did it most recently last summer at the Center for Mission and Ministry, and we break it down. There's a beginner day, an intermediate day, and an advanced day, and we cover topics on each day so you can jump in and out if you feel like, oh, I'm just going to benefit from the beginner level, or I'm way advanced and I just need to come to day three. Whatever your preference is, you can sign up for those particular days. The cost is $49 per day, or if you sign up for all 3 days, there's a discount. So the total price, $129. And there's even more information. There's a link here to learn more. Our registration form is live and ready to take your registrations. And just one caveat, and that is, we don't have a lot of room because we're offering it online. Our registration spots are very limited. So if you're interested in participating in Final Web for Dummies, I'd encourage you to check out the information and get registered as soon as you can. Again, this is the first official announcement, so you guys heard it here first on Wells Tech. Doesn't it pay to tune in and watch live? That's great. And we would love to have you join us there at Final Web for Dummies online. I also want to make mention of our Wells Tech Conference site. Wells Tech Conference 2015 coming to you next summer, July 9th through 11th at Country Springs Hotel and Conference Center in Waukesha, Wisconsin. We've updated the site to include an area where you can sign up to receive conference news, including the announcement of our registration for the conference when that comes online. So if you're interested in following the happenings with the Wells Tech Conference, give us your name and email address. We won't use it for anything at all except for sending you news about the Wells Tech Conference 2015. So visit the site at wells.net/wellstechconf and fill out our little form there, and you'll be on our email list to get notifications as they are announced about the conference. All right, time to move on then. We're going to talk about some community feedback. And first up, just want to mention that I heard from Pastor Matt Arnold, and he mentioned that in their congregation, they recently purchased this CD recorder. Now, what prompted their purchase was the fact that their cassette tape ministry kind of bit the dust, and they were at a point where they weren't wanting to continue with cassette tapes, but yet their shut-ins that they're preparing the audio recordings of their services for aren't on the internet. They aren't able to work with digital media necessarily, but most of them do have a CD player, an audio CD player, and so they went with this professional CD recorder. We'll have a link in the show notes to it on Amazon, Tascam CD-RW900, and it looks like a really high quality audio recorder. And Pastor Arnold offered to check back with us after they've used it for a while and give us an update and kind of a review of how well it's working for their congregation. I think this is kind of a spot where a lot of congregations are, whether where their cassette tape ministry has phased out and they've got to make some decisions about how best to continue to distribute their service information to their shut-ins. And so I appreciate Pastor Arnold sharing this with us, and I look forward to hearing from him again to see how it's working for him, whether it's been a plus or too much work or whatever in their congregation. We'll be interested in the update, Pastor. All right, this next batch is from yours truly, and I'm not sure if I've shared one before, but these are all Pinterest pins, and you know how much I enjoy pinning on Pinterest, and these I thought would be worthy of Wells Tech review. This first one is actually titled, How is This is how Google recommends you stay safe online. And it has a little image for each of these different recommendations, like stop and look before downloading, back up your data online, log out of public or shared computers, secure your router. And if you click through this image, you can get to a page where there's more information about each of these, and it's information from Google. So just some security type things on this infographic. Then I found an infographic called Famous Internet First, Then and Now. I thought this was really fun. Like the year 1971 was when the first email was ever sent. And it was sent by someone named Ray Tomlinson. As of 2014, 183 billion emails are sent daily. Big difference. The first search engine was named Archie, archive without the V, basically, Archie. It was created in 1990. There are now 45,587 Google searches per second. So since 1990, we've come a long way. First website went live on August 6, 1991. Created by Tim Berners-Lee. As of September 2014, 1 billion websites exist. Actually, it's 1 billion and one because I just created one to show you guys how to create a Google site. So we've added to the number of websites right here on this live podcast. Say cheese, the first photo uploaded to the internet was in 1992. Today, 1.8 billion photos are uploaded and shared daily. Lots of interesting little facts and comparing then and now and how far we've come. I think you'll enjoy this infographic. I won't sit here and read it all to you because you won't go look at it then, but check out the infographic. It's over on Pinterest, just waiting for your attention. And then finally, via Pinterest, I found out about this blog post on the Tech and Learning site. We talked about Tech and Learning before, and they do just awesome resources for teachers. This one's titled 10 More Easy Tech Tools That Every Educator Should Have Started Using Yesterday. I didn't find the original article, so this is the second list of 10 tools, and I was impressed with many of them on here, and many of them were familiar to me. We've talked about many of these, Google Classroom, ClassDojo, but some of them were new, like this Kahoot. It says it's a game-based classroom response system. It allows you to assess student learning in a fun and engaging way. Very simple to use. What sets this response system apart is that students are in competition to see not only who gets the answer right, but who answers first. At the completion of each question, it ranked participants in order of who clicked the answer the fastest. So that's Kahoot. There's others listed here. One I thought was especially interesting is called Bring It. Bringit.bz or biz is simple online sign-up sheets. So you create a free account, and then the folks that you share it with don't have to sign in or anything. It's just really simple and straightforward. Bring It. So if you're having your parents sign up for the Christmas party and what type of treats to bring or whatever, perhaps you want to try out this Web 2.0 tool called Bring It. All right, let's see. Next, we had an email from Lynn Knitz, and Lynn asked about crowdfunding. Let's see if I can find that email. It's pretty straightforward. Have you, as in Wells Tech, done any research on crowdfunding? And if so, what's your opinion? And you know what? We've been around a long time. We've recorded now almost 364 full shows. And I don't remember us doing a lot of discussion of crowdfunding like using a tool similar to Kickstarter to fund some type of initiative. I did tell Lynn that I know that Kingdom Workers uses a crowdfunding tool called eTapestry, and they share that with those who have signed up to go on Kingdom Worker events or, you know, outreach opportunities or whatever, so people can do fundraising to help support their efforts with Kingdom Workers. And it would be neat to dive into that further. If Martin was here, his brain might remember that we've talked about this, and I'm just totally zoning out. But at this point, I think we could learn a lot more about crowdfunding, especially if anyone out there in our listening audience is doing any crowdfunding efforts. So if you are, we'd love it if you would share with the class. And that's kind of the power of Wells Tech. This community feedback section is one of my favorite things that we do, because it's so wonderful to learn from all of you guys what you're doing in your different congregations and schools. So feel free to write in or phone in or tweet or whatever your favorite way is of communicating with us to tell us about your crowdfunding efforts if you have done that. All right, and then finally, just at the nick of time, I received a message from Pastor Rob Gunther. Hi, Pastor Gunther. He was actually on Wells Tech last week, and he's always seeing some new and cutting edge technology. This one was interesting, and he said he wants one. I think it's only $319, so shell out the dough and you can have one of these. It's a little navigation device that sits on your dashboard and projects onto the window in front of you. Interactive things. So if your phone rings, you can answer it by waving your finger in front of it and talk on the phone. You can, see maps. You can have email read to you, all kinds of things you can do. And it's projected right there in your line of sight as you're driving. So interesting, again, technology of the future. Their tagline is feels like driving in the future. Maybe if you had a NAVD, you'd need to have a quadcopter strapped to your wrist so you could, let it loose and let it take pictures of you from above as you're driving or something. I don't know. Kind of amazing times we live in to see all this futuristic development. So thanks, Rob, for giving us a glimpse of the future. All right, guys, that is going to wrap up Wells Tech for this week. Next week on Wells Tech, I'm excited that, number one, that Martin will be back with us. That'll be great to have him back. And also, I'm excited that Jason Schmidt will be joining us. Jason is one of our semi-regular classroom technology correspondents. Been a while since Jason's been on the show, but with a new school year, we're back in the groove of having ed tech conversations on the last Tuesday of each month. And Jason's coming on board to talk about STEM. That's the initiative to promote science, technology, engineering, and mathematics in the elementary and high school levels. And Jason suggested that perhaps we could talk about STEM on a shoestring budget. So perhaps you don't have a lot of money set aside to invest in the cutting edge software or curriculum or whatever for STEM in your school. But I think there are plenty of resources that you can do to engage your students and introduce STEM even on a shoestring budget. So tune in next week for that discussion of STEM on a shoestring budget. So looking forward to having you here, Jason. We call him Mr. Sunshine. He always brings a lot of happiness to our little podcast. All right, guys, we end each show with a video. And this week's video is on our our instructional channel, and it's from Adorama TV. And I'm not familiar with Adorama, but they apparently have hundreds of photography tutorials out there. And I believe Adorama, the website, exists to sell you photography stuff. But you can come to their Adorama TV and learn from them. And what they've put together that's really unique, and there's a video overview of it, is they've put together an interactive chart. And let me just scroll over. It's the where to start chart. So you start at the beginning and ask yourself what's most important, depth of field or motion. And from there, you drill down to this really extensive flow chart of options. And what's neat and unique about this is that each one of these is clickable. And it takes you to a video in the Adorama TV collection of videos, library of videos, where you can watch. So perhaps you need to use a wider angle lens. Well, there's a video about it. Do you need to stabilize the camera? There's a video about it, and it goes on and on and on. It's an excellent chart, and it ties together all their collection, their library of videos at Adorama TV, and helps you to zero in on the techniques and the instruction that you're looking for. So watch the overview video. He kind of explains it in that. We'll have that embedded on the website. And then learn from them and use their where to start chart to improve your photography skills. That's what I've got for you. I will make one more mention of the fact that you can find all this great content archived over at wellstech.wells.net. Each show is posted there in both audio and video format. We have links to where you can find it in iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. You can grab the RSS feed. And then there's tons of social links where you can communicate with us via Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Digo, Pinterest, even over on our Wells Tech Wiki and our Wells Tech listserv. And if that weren't enough, you could send us a voicemail and we can include your voice in next week's Wells Tech. We'd love to have that. I see that Martin is still watching and chiming in with the fact that Adorama was a pick of his a while back and has awesome photography tutorials. Excellent resources for beginner and advanced photographers. So thank you, Martin. I needed your brain here to plan this show. I didn't remember that, but at least we're on the same wavelength. So that's a good thing. All right, guys, wellstech.wells.net. Join us, contribute, and tune in next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Thanks very much for watching. God bless your day.